Hello, everyone. Welcome back for another exciting visit to the Awesome Village. My name is Greg, and joining me is...
Brian.
John.
And I'm Glenn.
So, guys, what you been up to?
Not looking at the sky.
Yeah, that's... Don't do that.
Yeah, we're recording this the day of the great eclipse of 2024.
I actually did look at the sky because I had my eclipse glasses that we got for my daughter, and I was trying to find the sun, and I couldn't even find it.
I live streamed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't even really see anything.
Well, I saw it.
It was so cloudy.
I saw it in Dallas, Texas, pretty good on the live stream. NASA did a pretty cool thing where they played it from all over the country.
Yeah.
And then they had different people. Like Scarlett Johansson was there for some reason.
I don't find any of this shit fascinating, to be honest with you. It happens every so often. Why?
The next time it's happening is 2040, so this is the last time in a long time.
Who gives
time.
A shit? I mean, I don't really see the fascination with it.
Nocturnal animals think it's night and they come out.
It's 26 years from now. I mean, we might not be. You definitely won't be here.
I don't care. I don't care.
I mean, our children will be doing Awesome
Village.
If you
tell me we can see the Aurora Borealis or something, then I'm like, okay, that's
it's a similar phenomenon.
Not really.
I'm always fascinated by your bar for excitement.
I don't really care about an eclipse.
I know. It just tickles me. Like,
especially when people are telling me to be careful.
I don't care about it. Other people should.
No, I mean, people are fascinated with, you know.
I feel like, yeah, like they have to keep telling everybody to be careful. Like on the news, don't stare directly at the sun. I feel like don't give that warning. Let people that want to stare directly at the sun, let them stare directly into the sun.
A great Jesse the Mind Ventura, when he was governor of Minnesota, that's one of the things he said about the sign that says don't walk on the frozen ice. Every year during that season, someone's going to walk on that ice and fall through. And that is just nature's way.
I don't know how
sorting things out.
His impersonation, yeah. Jesse Ventura.
I'm working on it. Work in progress.
Well, it's like the thing that says don't drink the bleach. I mean, just don't put that on there.
Yeah, maybe if we take the warning off for about a year or two, we'll, you know,
survival of the fittest. Right?
Yeah. I think that's an old, like, I hate to bring up a canceled person, but like Louis C.K. said that once about nut allergies. Like, I'm just saying, maybe if for 1 year we root that problem out. But yeah, the eclipse. I was home today, and
surprised there wasn't a 24-hour marathon of Little Shop of Horrors
or Twilight Eclipse.
Did y'all find any mouthy plants in your?
I found no mouthy plants. I really weren't looking.
If you go home,
I walked outside and I just kind of looked up in the sky and I was like, and just walked back in because there was nothing really to see.
I guess I could have watched Apocalypto. It's the only movie that makes me think of an eclipse.
Well, that in the TV series Heroes. Kind of, what was the name of the person that would sing during the opening?
I remember we used to always say that. Shankar?
Not Shankara Stones, but Shankar.
Yes. There's no, like, with the, you said that, but with Apocalypto, I don't think there's any other, like, eclipse based films. They don't really, like, you know, that proves your point, Ryan. It's not exciting
important.
Enough.
Yeah, there we go.
So let's dive on in.
There is that scene in Mad Men when he's flirting with his daughter's teacher during the eclipse.
Well, that'll do it.
Yeah, I mean,
so there's that. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No. I appreciate you looking for, you know, all the angles. So we have one TV show and one movie.
So yeah, I just look movies with eclipses. We have The Seventh Sign.
Oh yeah.
Pitch Black. Dolores Claiborne.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Of all the movies.
That's actually a big part of the movie.
Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah, so there we go.
All right.
Well, I want to kind of get this out of the way immediately just so that we can focus on happier things after. But
I can't wait.
The first TV show that we're going to discuss is something that was on the ID Network, and then I got to watch it on Max. And I haven't watched the final one, the one that they just did. But Quiet on the Set, a documentary that ruined childhoods everywhere, has come out.
Yep.
Who here has watched it?
All of us.
Okay. This will be an interesting conversation.
What is there to talk about?
Well, this show's kind of all over the place. This is what people are talking about.
I mean, I think I understand why Amanda Bynes is crazy.
Yeah. So the thing that I didn't realize Dennis Blundin from Head of the Class had the career that he's had.
Genius.
Well, the other thing too is I didn't see any of the episodes before. I was like on Twitter, his apology popped up, which that was like that looked staged as a son of a bitch with
you
the guy interviewing him. Like, I can hear that you're sorry.
Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Ricky.
Cousin Ricky.
Yeah.
Sorry, your mom blew up, Ricky. John was going to say that. I beat him too.
Yeah.
It was a very an unsettling and unusual thing to watch. Like, it wasn't. I mean, there's always stories of stuff that we don't know about, you know. Mm-hmm. And but what shocked me was the shit that they aired. I didn't watch those Nickelodeon
shows. I was too old for.
I kind of knew of them, but I never watched.
But like the shit with Ariana Grande trying to jerk off a potato, like, how in the hell did they put that on air? And no one was like, maybe we shouldn't put this out. Or her like laying upside down, throwing water all over her face. I'm like, what is going on?
And all the weird feet stuff.
And him demanding massages was very odd.
It's just, as weird as this whole thing is, the conversation surrounding it is really weird. There have been people that have been talking about these stories for a long time. And to kind of see them hit and the outpouring of, oh, wow, that we should, you know, change laws and rules and stuff to make sure that, you know, children in the entertainment industry are protected versus the people that just, like, they're just doing that for attention.
I mean, the crazy thing is that they had laws in place back then, and parents were...
They just were ignored.
Or they just didn't... Some of the parents didn't give a shit. And, like, that one lady who was talking about, like, she thinks her son might have gotten kicked off because she was one of the parents who actually was fighting for her son on the show. It was very weird. I mean...
Because it was interesting the way they put it, how the pressure the kids had because of, you know, the nature of their life, where they were the family's livelihood, pretty much.
Yeah.
I
gotta tell you, like, the first three episodes, two or three, they're good. But the stuff that really got hard to watch was when...
Drake Bell.
That was the third episode, because the second episode ended with him coming out.
Yeah, and it The part that really got to me as a parent was when his dad was trying to protect him. He knew something was wrong. That was hard to watch. And
His dad, just in general, broke my fucking heart. Him, like, when he finally found out about everything that happened, he was like, yeah. And I like, just the problem that most people don't, like, I guess we don't think about it, is that plausible level of deniability. It's like when anyone with a conspiracy theory or something, when there's just enough of a kernel of truth to override the initial misgivings, you throw logic out of the window with it, and like you kind of explain it away. And the level of embarrassment that someone who's been assaulted like that faces, that's why people don't necessarily come out immediately with it. And you know,
we do our awesome villager on our episodes and stuff, and that's you know, for fun, but. If I can pick an awesome person, I would pick that parent who noticed something weird about Drake Bell's relationship with that guy calling him.
Yeah, his girlfriend's
mom. Yeah, they didn't say who she was, but whoever she is, she's a hero.
She is.
Because that takes a... I mean, that was really amazing that she was able to see that, identify it, and deal with it immediately.
But also to break through to a person that's almost like, I'm just dealing with this... I'm trying to get through it. And she was able to kind of look at him and go, you have a way out. Yeah. And he took it.
And the fact that it wasn't a member of his family, it was just somebody that truly cared about him. You're right.
That was the thing. Like, she didn't have to do that. She was a good person who didn't want to see a child in danger. That was really awesome. I know why we probably can't know who she is, but she deserves credit, whoever she was.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that, again, and I know a lot of course correction has come back out since then, but like the list of people that stood up for that guy in court,
the Pickle dude,
but I'll say this, was it I think it was the mom from
Growing Pains,
yes, she at least like backed up when
after
a couple of people did,
yeah
but beforehand, before the thing launched, and the criticism was, oh, you know this is coming out, so that's why you're getting ahead of it. The Ryder Strong and Will Friedle from Boy Meets World kind of talked about it.
And they
Ryder Strong has since then like reached out to Drake Bell.
And they talk about that in the fifth episode.
Okay.
And they actually played a clip of Will Friedle talking about it on their podcast and saying that like he didn't realize until he got there in the courtroom that like why am I on this side? Like he just never would have believed it until he saw who it was, and then he just suddenly believed him.
But and I will say the fifth episode just came out.
Yeah.
And
it's really just, if you've watched the first four episodes, the fifth episode is set up differently. It's Soledad O'Brien just interviewing a few of the people, just talking about, you know, kind of things that have happened since it came out. Just it's almost like a what is she on?
You know what?
Is she on 60 Minutes or I forget? What, it's almost like a 60 Minutes interview.
I didn't watch it because to me it looked like one, like that follow up episode for The Tiger King. Remember when the show came out and it was like a huge hit?
But and that was more, that was Joel McHale and it was like a comedy thing. This was a serious
interview.
But I
mean, it was like, it was the way it was set up where it was just like, oh, they're just recapping everything.
Yeah, it wasn't a part of the same like thing. And honestly, my biggest thing with it is the Dan Schneider stuff. That guy's an asshole. Like, totally. He is totally. But this was also the problem that I had with a lot of stuff when the Me Too movement was going on really big. It's like, they talked about how he's an asshole in that first episode. Then in the second episode, he's an asshole. And he's maybe verbally abusive in some of this stuff. Then all of a sudden, they're talking about this guy who's, like, sending the naked pictures of himself to a kid. Then this other guy who literally raped somebody. Then for 5 seconds, they're like, oh yeah, and there was another child molester there. But let's get back to how bad Dan Schneider is. And it's like, he's nothing compared to what you just brushed over.
Yeah, but, again... I don't know, and I can't judge because I have no idea, but, like, I don't know what Dan Schneider knew and what he didn't. Well, and I know that Drake Bell's kind of like,
I was about to say, they
helped
did,
me out. And,
they
and,
did, out of 100%, like 97% of it was bad for Dan Schneider, but the little bit of good was he seemed to come to Drake Bell's aid when he
And they talk about that in the fifth episode, the new one.
But, yeah, my big thing was just lumping people in together that are, it's not the same situation. It was bad, but it's not the same kind
of... Yeah, I know what you mean. It's the same story, but it's they're different situations.
He was just very misogynistic, which back in the early in the 90s and stuff, there was a lot of people who treated women...
Yeah.
Not realizing they were being... That's just the culture, I think it was back then. Like, making two women do the work of one person and getting paid less than half of what a full salary was, like, that's just...
It's horrible,
but, like... I feel like there was part of me that was like, you know, these women who went through all that, they did that, and they the girl, like, she talked about how she went to the Screenwriters Association and stuff, and they fixed it, and she ended up losing her job, but she had to go through that to make things better for women to come after her, which sucks because she's probably not going to get her roses for it.
The shitty part is that, like, anyone has to go through any of that to
improve
things. We should, you know, kind of, but the way that system's set up, like, the fact that that was a normalized thing for network executives sucks. And also the fact that there were only two women in that writer's room at all.
Right.
And that they were treated in the way that they were treated. Like, that's a...
That and, I mean, I guess the whole thing with Dan Schneider, the way he looked growing up, and they kind of talked about, you know, a little bit of arrest development where he was living vicariously through these people and purposely putting these scantily clad tweens because that's... I mean, like, he never got to experience that when he was younger,
and
it's just it's a very weird situation. And then,
a lot of therapy needed by a lot.
Yeah. So the one scene that I don't even it's definitely disturbing, but it's also confusing. Is him fully dressed in a hot tub with Amanda Bynes? So many questions. Why are you in a hot tub with a minor, and it's just the two of them? And why are you fully clothed? It's just so weird. It kind of reminded me of that stupid part in Private Parts where that chick invites him to her apartment and she's like, well, if you leave your clothes on, you can't cheat. It almost feels like he was thinking that in his head. Like, I'll just keep my clothes on. No one will accuse me of anything.
And no one did. For years.
I mean, he was never accused of the stuff like the sexual predators were. He was just, I think, just a misogynistic asshole. Like,
who did a lot of inappropriate things.
Very inappropriate things. But it's a fascinating watch.
It's riveting. And I think it... You know, you guys say this sometimes, and I don't intentionally, like, seek out stuff to make me sad, but there's things that are necessary to watch. Like, you know, Schindler's List is a necessary, like, you need to go through that sort of sadness. And this is one of those things where, like, while it's disturbing, it's kind of a cautionary tale that I think a lot of people should watch.
The way I thought about it is, remember when we watched, what was it, The Social Dilemma, where it felt like you were watching something important?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I felt like when I was watching this. I mean... Like, it's going to change children's TV kind of thing.
But I think, to that, like, there are ways to do these things to where it's not... I mean, I guess it depends on the subject matter, but, like, I found this to be very informative, but also very entertaining, and there were some positives, some uplifting things in it. It wasn't all...
Yeah.
Which was... That's why I liked it so much.
It was a well done.
There are some stories that there just is nothing going to be uplifting about it, and like you're saying, like with Schindler's List. But I mean, there are some good things
with his lips specifically.
Schindler's List.
Schindler's List.
But like, you know, there are some good things in that movie, which is why I think that movie can be rewatched.
Oh, Ryan. Well, let's redeem the '90s and talk a little bit about a show that has come back Disney Plus. X-Men 97.
A.K.A. The Tale of Sexy Magneto.
So, is it just you and me that have watched it, Glenn?
I think. Did you watch
it? I was going to start watching it, and then my kid wasn't interested, so we turned it off.
I never really watched the original, so I didn't.
I watched it. I wasn't a hardcore viewer, but I watched a lot of it.
I didn't complete the series. It kind of stopped...
In 1996.
Well, but the thing with it was is it was show like because like Sosa and I were like massive X-Men fans.
Oh, I remember.
And
those banners.
Basically, like I couldn't keep up with it because with the times it was coming on, I was always doing something. So I kind of lost track of it. Probably about the second or third season.
Yeah. So it's a sequel to the series.
It picks up where the other series left off.
Yeah. It'd be kind of interesting if they revisited this with other animated series.
And I mean, this rumors are Spider-Man is next.
Yeah, I was thinking of this one's massively successful.
I was thinking of something like G.I. Joe or Transformers or maybe GoBots.
GoBots.
I bet you like GoBots.
But you want to take us through where the original series ended and where this one picks up?
Well, the original series, if I'm not mistaken, ended with like Professor X leaving. I'm not sure about that, but
I thought he died.
I don't know. If I'm not mistaken, the original one ended with him. I don't know. But at any rate, this picks up with he's been assassinated by Henry Peter Gyrick, who is one of the government liaisons, and Cyclops is in charge of the X-Men. But him and Jean Grey are contemplating leaving. Jean Grey is pregnant. And they kind of got this nice little, thing going on. There's some mutant sympathy out there, but there's the, mutant liberation front, the fucking Friends of Humanity are out there, and they're using Sentinel tech to try to, take on mutants and
they kind of look like Mega Man's gun.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
definitely do. So yeah, this kind of picks up with that. Now the big twist at the beginning of it, and you've seen this in the trailer, is that in The Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier, plot twist, he left everything to Magneto, who has epic flowing hair.
Yeah.
Which I'd love to see on Ian McKellen. So it's basically like the impact of that Magneto's presence has on the team, particularly to Gambit and Rogue, among other things. But this series is adapting stories from the 90s comics that kind of surprised me that they're actually doing. But they're handling it in a slightly different way. It's massively entertaining. Cyclops is my favorite Marvel character. And
he gets his due here.
He definitely gets his due.
I read one of the things I read about this show was that they were like, how did it take 20 years of X-Men movies and an animated show finally has Cyclops as awesome as he's supposed to be?
Well, but that's the thing. So I'm glad you said that because Cyclops is supposed to be mutant Captain America. That's the easiest way of describing it. He's that level of a tactician. He's supposed to be to the X-Men what Captain America is. He makes the hard decisions. All that kind of stuff might seem a little bit, stuffed because he's, got the responsibility. What's interesting to me is you've got characters like Morph that was introduced in the original show. I found it interesting that when he's changing now, it seems like he almost has the powers of the people that he's changing into. But I look, everything about this show is great. All the characters, the voices, the fact that the new Jubilee voice actress, they actually had an appearance by the old voice actress at the show. They're really paying a lot of respect to the original series, but kind of taking it into new territory.
Right, and I like the animation style where they made it look like the original series a bit. Although, you can tell they updated a little, but it does. And there's actually an episode, without giving any spoilers away, that pays a lot of homage to the old arcade game.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool.
Do they make their last stand in the show?
No, because that was a shitty film.
The show just started.
They haven't made their last time.
Yeah, I think it's a 10-episode season.
I think so, but I think they've already picked it up for season two.
Yeah, Disney Plus, right?
Yes, it's very good.
Well, Manhunt.
So you want to?
Yeah. So
me and John have seen this.
I hadn't even heard about this show being made at all, and Glenn just messaged us that this came out. Manhunt is about the manhunt of John Wilkes Booth after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
I watched the first episode.
It's an Apple show.
And it's very good.
It is.
I'm caught up. At this point, I think there's 5 episodes out, and there's going to be 7 total.
They come out on, is it Fridays?
Yes, Fridays. Yeah. So the main character is actually played by Tobias Menzies, and he's the Secretary of War under Lincoln, Edwin Stanton. And basically, after the assassination, he is put in charge of hunting down John Wilkes Booth. And it goes back and forth from him and then John Wilkes Booth. And the show does a good job of, it jumps around a lot in time, but it always tells you this many days before the assassination, or this many months before the assassination, or this many days after. And so you kind of know where you are at all times. And it's very interesting about how in-depth that plot against...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was a huge, like, conspiracy.
My favorite thing about it, after only watching first episode, is the historical glow-up of Stanton.
Yeah.
Because he does not look like...
No, he
Tobias
was
Menzies
from what I've seen the pictures of him. He was like an old man with a big long white beard.
Well, you remember the Lincoln movie that Spielberg did?
Yeah.
He was played by the actor from that played the sheriff in My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is a lot more accurate. But yeah, the first episode was very good. I like the detective work that it's going into it.
So it's an interesting one of the things that, because I watched it with my wife, who is a social studies teacher. And she actually uses the book this is based on to teach her students, because the book is a YA novel. And she thought that it's a kind of an interesting thing that the way that they took this YA novel and they made a not YA show with the violence and the language. But she said, so far, it's a pretty good adaptation. It's just they definitely made it grittier and more adult. But I thought it was a very interesting idea to take a YA novel and adapt it this way. But so far, it's very good.
And the guy that plays John Wilkes Booth is, Apple must love him because he plays John. His name's Anthony Boyle. He plays John Wilkes Booth in this, and he's the guy that played Harry Crosby in Masters of the Air, the navigator who's like the narrator of the show as well. Two completely different type characters, and I mean his range is pretty incredible. He's very good in both of these shows. Yeah.
But there's some good supporting work. Was in Glenn Morshower, what's called the Secret Service agent from 24?
From 24, he's Andrew Johnson.
He's Andrew Johnson. But then, like, Patton Oswalt plays kind of a non-funny role.
Yeah.
And another actor is Matt
Walsh.
Matt Walsh.
He plays, Dr. Mudd, who was one of the conspirators.
Yeah.
My name is Mudd.
But, so far, I think it's very well done.
What is it, Lily? Is it Lily Taylor? She's Lincoln's widow in it, and she shows the insanity that they history books speak of.
Yeah. But it's on Apple Plus. I would recommend it.
Yes, cool. Very much so.
Well, Glenjamin and I got to continue our journey, our final journey, with the crew from Star Trek Discovery as season 5 has premiered.
Yes, the first two episodes dropped.
Of is this going to be 10 too? Like,
I think
I hope not, man. It's to drop 2 like that.
Yeah, and this is like you said, this is the final season.
So think about that. They didn't know it was the final season when they were filming this season, but apparently Paramount was kind enough to let them go back in and shoot a couple of things to wrap up things. I honestly hope we get more with these characters, but that's something for the larger season to talk about. Let's talk about what this season is about.
Yeah, so the first two episodes dropped. They were called Red Directive and Under the Twin Moons. And Star Trek Discovery, it's been a very interesting ride where it's shown a lot of potential. I don't know if it's ever actually gotten to the potential that it's shown, but this season so far, it's very promising because they're doing something very interesting where it seems like the ongoing mystery of the season is a sequel to a episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and not one that I would think they would... It's not like one of the big popular... It's just, it's a very specific episode that, it was an interesting choice. It was an episode from the 6th season.
Do you know this?
Here's the interesting thing. I read an interview with the showrunner, and they talked about why they selected this particular episode. So the show's known for the mystery box kind of thing.
Right.
And they said instead of just having the mystery box, they put a literal mystery box at the beginning of it, and then opened it, and so you kind of know what the season's going to be about. Doesn't mean there won't be twists and turns,
so
they
tell you it's a sequel from this.
So when
very clearly,
when at the kind of climax of the first episode, they were like, oh, this happened on this star date involving Jean-Luc Picard, and they show like a clip from this
perfect.
Episode.
Oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Now, the thing with it, too, is that they said the reason they chose that particular episode, which literally it's a deep cut, is because they were like, you know, they had this like profound episode, and then the next episode, they never talk about it again.
Yeah, because it was the serialized nature. They never did a part two. They never talked about it again, but it was like, had massive implications.
Yeah.
The second episode had kind of a deep cut too to an episode called Booby Trap that I thought was interesting, but they're definitely diving into like next gen deep cuts so far this year, and they introduced a new character played by the actor from Californication that played Lou Ashby.
Yeah, I love this guy. He was on Battlestar Galactica.
Callum Rennie.
Yeah,
who was he on Galactica?
On Galactica, he was one of the Cylons, if I'm not mistaken. You'll know him if you see him.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a drug dealer in Memento. I mean, he was in the Umbrella Academy.
He's an incredible actor. Like, I really like this guy.
He's got good range. But it's a very cool character that he plays. And
which, actually, his race is another deep cut from Deep Space Nine.
I read about that. But I'm in, like I said, it's two episodes in, and I'm hoping it stays where the level is, and it doesn't. Because the whole, I was enjoying that season with the burn. Until they say what the burn was, and that kind of let me down. Well, so I'm hoping this doesn't do it.
I'm also hoping that this one's not giving us another Todd Stashwick situation. Mm.
Right.
But yeah, this cast, I love how, too, they're with the situation as it is in this century, they're basically setting it up where even though, like, people are going off and doing their own thing, they're still at that central hub, that Starfleet Command, so they can still kind of run into each other.
Right.
Which I think is cool, and it actually expands that work, because we've barely seen any of this century, because we've only gotten to see it for 2.5 seasons.
Right, and that first season, everything was very contained.
Yeah.
So, I'm hoping, I got my fingers crossed, it goes out with a bang. I love all the actors, and I like these characters. Like you said, I kind of hope a couple of them stick around.
Yeah, at least get some movies here and there.
Yeah, some appearances at least.
Yeah, give us a Paramount Plus feature film.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of feature films, there is a film that I never got to watch. You gentlemen got to watch it. Spoiler. But called The Gentlemen, and there is now a spinoff series on Netflix. So really quickly, finally got to watch The Gentlemen. It was on sale for like $5, I guess, coinciding with this. I fucking loved that movie. I was talking about it with a friend, Sam, at work, and he's like, I love Guy Ritchie's character creation. Mm-hmm. is always even if the movie's not good, the characters are really good. But I loved the whole concept of, like, you know, in a small country where they have all these busy bodies, how do you run a marijuana trade? And the concept is very brilliant. And to carry this over into a show was cool as well. So the show follows, it's a little bit of the plot of the film. Basically, you have someone who was played by Matthew McConaughey, who is a drug kingpin.
He's an American expat.
American expat went to. He found that he was able to sell weed, and it was very popular. But how do you grow things? So he basically partnered with all these lords that have all this land, but the upkeep of Downton Abbey's is hard. So he basically pays them an annual fee, and he's able to use their land and to cultivate marijuana underground. So this series follows, because that whole movie is about him trying to sell the business and what ultimately happens there. Great characters, Charlie Hunnam, all that stuff. This one follows, one of those lords has passed away, and his son comes back. His sons, yes.
Yeah.
His son comes back, who's actually a sort of a straight-laced military guy, comes back to the family, finds out that he, even though he's the second son, has inherited the estate, and then finds out about the stuff that was going on at the estate. When he's introduced to the Glass family, who runs this batch of, 11 or 12 estates. Gentlemen, what do you think?
I think it's excellent. And you don't necessarily have to watch the Gentlemen movie to watch this, but you should watch the Gentlemen movie because it's excellent. And it kind of just gives you a little bit of background of how that business works, I guess. But I think Theo James is very good in this character.
Yes.
And I don't know, me and my wife keep on saying that he's the long-lost Franco. He just looks like he's a Franco. He should be a Franco,
brother. He absolutely does. British Franco.
Yeah. The other brother is actually very funny as well. And he was, Ryan, you know this guy. He was the best friend in that show, Lovesick. There was the British show where the guy that got the STDs.
Oh, yeah, right.
And he had to go and, like, rehash it, you know, every woman he's ever been with. He was the best friend in that.
Yeah.
And the show. I mean, it's
he was
like,
in the Crown too.
He was in the Crown, yeah.
You get Ray Winstone.
Ray Winstone, yeah.
I love Ray. You gotta love Ray.
You
Winstone.
Get Bullet Tooth Tony himself, Vinnie
yep.
Jones,
yep.
playing a very interesting.
That is
like,
a great choice for him,
non-Vinnie yeah. Jones character. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I mean, it's like you said earlier, when Guy Ritchie, he knows how to make characters, and the characters are just all very well rounded and very interesting.
Well, even all of the I don't want to say villain of the week, but the kind of like the when they branch out into other areas, you know, the gospel guy.
Yeah.
Gospel John.
Yeah. All of these characters are very, they feel lived in.
Yeah.
And that's one of the draws of the show.
And how cool is Giancarlo Esposito?
Oh, God. I love everything about this. Like, to John's point, you don't have to, but definitely watch the movie and
where's
watch the series.
Where's the show at?
The show's on Netflix. It's Netflix. 8 episodes of amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Like Theo James, he radiates charisma. He's a movie star.
And I really like the Asian guy that runs the...
Oh,
the farm for them. He's so funny.
Well, I mean, we also neglected to talk about Susie Glass, but like that actress, I think the first thing I actually remember seeing her in was
Pirates of the Caribbean.
And she was also in the, not the Divergent movie, the Maze Runner movies.
Okay.
But yeah, she also, I never would have thought based on those roles that she's fucking scary and awesome and hot and great.
She did a horror movie about alligators called Crawl.
Ah, yeah. I never watched
it. It wasn't about Pauly Shore.
No. You never saw that?
I know. I own it, but I've never seen
it. It's really good.
I never saw it either.
It's excellent.
I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Mostly from you, Ryan.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
But no, you're right. The cast in this is great. The production's great. I mean, Guy Ritchie directs the first two episodes, and he does it kind of like a movie.
You find this kind of interesting that they did this? Like, I don't think The Gentleman was a big hit.
It wasn't. That's why I think it's an interesting hit.
Well, I wonder how stuff like this gets greenlit. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm curious.
You know,
I'd
be curious. I don't know the numbers on this, but I would suspect that at least it made its money back.
Or maybe had a cult following that...
I think it kind of did because Colin Farrell had a character in there that a lot of people dressed like for Halloween.
Awesome.
It kind of became a cult thing. And then I guess, like, what do you do with that? Because you don't necessarily do a sequel because the first one wasn't a big hit. I think this was the right route. Make a
interesting.
I wonder how it did the rest of the world over, though. How did it do in England and things like that?
I think it's very fascinating that they're going to do something like this.
I'm a fan. Go watch it. Well, we're going to very quickly review some short reviews of some movies that we've maybe talked about before, but some of us have kind of come to the party and seen. And the first one I'm going to choose is the oldest one on the list, which is Real Genius.
Yeah, I have never seen this movie.
I still have not seen this movie.
And my wife had been telling me, you got to see it. And I forgot what streaming service we were on. It might have been Tubi or some shit. And it was just there. And I was like, well, fuck it. Let's just put it on. And this movie is like a hilarious 80s film.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it isn't more talked about when it comes to 80s movies. Val Kilmer looks like he is... either high or drunk and having the time of his life the entire movie. It's a really simple story about, like, basically smart kids at a school with an asshole teacher is the easiest way to describe it. And if you haven't seen Real Genius, go out of your way to find it. I don't recall which streaming service it's on, but, I mean, it's an old 80s film. You know, just throw it in your DVR as a search, and I'm sure it'll pop up and record it for you. But it's definitely worth checking out. I'd probably give it, like, a 7.
What's funny, and it probably went over your head at the time, but because you hadn't seen this movie, but in the stupid MacGruber movie, they, you know, Val Kilmer's the villain.
Yeah.
They have a flashback scene when they're all in college, and he's basically just his character.
That's hilarious.
Genius, isn't
yeah.
It?
Yeah, if you have, like, cable or YouTube TV, it's playing on Sundance, BBC American, IFC, like, constantly.
Yeah, and I don't think there was so much into it where, like, there's stuff that they would cut out. So if you watch it on regular TV, you're not going to miss much.
The next film we're going to talk about is A Man Called Otto.
Yeah, I stumbled across this on Netflix. This is a Tom Hanks movie where he seems like he's just playing a very disgruntled old man. Kind of like a, you know, Clint Eastwood, get off my lawn, Gran Turismo type. And
Gran Torino.
Torino, yeah. Gran Turismo is a different thing. I'd love to see his character in Gran Turismo.
That would be great. You can't drive that car.
A Man Called Otto, though, it wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting a lighter falling down. Like, I kept seeing that scene in the trailer where he's at the hardware store trying to buy a rope.
Yeah.
And I thought the whole movie was going to be like that, and it's not. He's just a very bitter old guy, and he's just trying to live out his life, and he's debating committing suicide because his wife had just passed away. and he sort of inadvertently becomes friends with these people who move in near his, in this, like a kind of like a gated community.
It's like condos.
Condos, yeah. Yeah, it's surprisingly good. Like, yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm surprised Tom Hanks didn't get Oscar talk for this film.
I think I saw it, like, around Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. We were at Karen's family's house in Monroe, and somebody just rented it one day. They're like, oh, let's watch A Man Called Otto. I was like, yeah, why not? And we watched it, and I was like, it was surprisingly good.
It was really, really entertaining.
Really heartwarming.
Heartwarming, funny. I would probably give it, like, a 7.5.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. It about a 7, I think. Definitely go check it out.
Well, let's continue this journey with Ryan watching films.
All right.
He's seen Zone of Interest and Anatomy of the Fall.
Yeah, the Oscar films. Where should I start? Let's start with Anatomy of a Fall. That movie's a piece of shit. Not really a piece of shit. Let me clarify.
I always love when he has hot takes on stuff.
Yeah.
So
especially when they're incorrect.
It's one of the best animal performances I've ever seen.
Well, that damn dog? Yeah, I don't know how.
That dog was good.
Either the dog is an amazing actor, or they had incredible effects, because that was looked like a real dog doing stuff. But anyway, here's the thing about this
doing
movie.
Doing dog things.
So, the title says it all. Like, a character dies in a fall, and there's suspicious circumstances. Did the wife do it? Did he commit suicide? We don't know.
Was it an accident?
We don't know really anything. The movie is like 2 hours and 30 minutes. And it moves at an absolute snail's pace. It's 220 maybe. It's around 220.
I don't know. I didn't think it seemed that long at all.
I was watching it and I was just bored to tears. The acting is amazing. I'll give you this. Amazing performances from the little kid and the lady who I think
Sandra Hewlett.
She get an Oscar nomination for that? She should have. Yeah, I was about to say she was.
And
amazing.
The director got the best director.
But again, if I watch a movie and when it's over, I think to myself, well, I'll never want to watch this again. I can't say it was a good movie that I enjoyed it. Like I will never want to watch that movie again.
I mean, I disagree with you. Yeah, because there are movies where I'm like, I couldn't take the emotion.
That's different. This movie's not like that. There's no real emotional reasoning.
But that's why we're clarifying, because you just made a generalist statement.
It has nothing to do with the fact that like, there's some brutal deaths or it's really sad. It's nothing like that. It's just the movie was so slow, and then it has a very ambiguous ending, I'm fine with.
It's a courtroom drama.
Which I was not
expecting.
I mean, it's really courtroom.
Well, yeah, it's a courtroom.
I mean, like they don't. I mean, this is real. Like sometimes they put in a little,
extremely ballroom, not extremely.
They put some stuff in to kind of make tease up the interest in it or beef up the drama. They don't do any of that. It's very cut and dry. It's a well made film. I can't say anything bad about the acting, the way it's filmed, the cinematography is sensational. But I'll never want to watch it again. It was just boring and just I'd probably give it like a 5.
Wow.
Again, it's a well-made film. If somebody asked me, what'd you think? I'm like, I didn't like it, but it's a, if you like Oscar-type movies that are very slow and deliberate and,
I think it won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival.
I think it did. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, tell us, though, about the movie So Nice You Watched It Twice.
Yeah, I watched this one twice just because I wanted to see if I missed some stuff. So,
what's the second, the title?
The title of this is The Zone of Interest, which is about the commandant or whatever of Auschwitz, and
you got
him living with his family.
Also Sandra Hewlett.
Next to Auschwitz concentration camp. So I'll come at this one from a couple different ways. Like, I thought it was amazingly done. The use of sound was absolutely spectacular. But to a point, like, if I wanted to teach my kids about World War II, I don't think I could show them this movie unless they already knew in advance everything about the Holocaust, because the movie doesn't show anything, which is part of its charm, its cleverness. So, like, if you don't know anything about Auschwitz, you're not going to get what the hell's going on.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, I think they just, at this point in time in history, everybody knows about the Holocaust.
Absolutely. So. But again, like if I wanted to teach kids about the... I couldn't show them this because...
I'd probably show them Life is Beautiful first.
You have to know everything that really happened to sort of get it, especially at the end when it flashes forward to the present time. Mm-hmm. My main complaint was that the movie just... I thought this one ended too soon. Like, I wanted to know more about what happened to him, like, to the family. Like,
you don't get a conclusion of, like, I mean, I'm assuming they all got arrested, or at least he was, or probably
he got arrested and executed.
Again, like, I would have loved to have seen that in the film, even if you give me an epilogue with some scrolling things, anything. But I thought it ended very abruptly. I wanted a little bit more from it. I thought the guy was incredible. There were a lot of things, though, that were very, I mean, so subtle that I like, when he was fishing in the river,
uh-huh.
I thought he got bit by a crab or something.
No. What, that weren't
no crab. It wasn't crab. It was something else. And my second viewing, I realized what it was. And I'm like, oh, and I saw it in the river. You kind of have to really pay attention. This isn't the type of movie where you can look on your phone.
Oh, no.
You need to really look, pay attention to what you're watching. So
well,
this
plus
one,
it's a foreign film, so you're going to miss the
exactly.
dialogue.
Well, you could always put it on dubbed. But,
did you?
No, I don't do that. But this one I enjoyed a lot more. I would probably give it like an 8.
Nice.
And Zone of Interest, I think, is on Max.
Yeah, it just came on Max.
Anatomy of a Fall. I don't remember where that was at. Paramount Plus, maybe? I can't remember.
Well, I watched it. We're not going to dive too much into it because Ryan needs to get a chance to watch this, too.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Anyone But You is a comedy that has come out, came out like last year. It's basically the reason people are primarily talking about Sydney Sweeney these days. And, you know, I got a little bit of a crush. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Not from Adam Webb.
No, definitely not from Adam Webb. But this was another one that was on sale for like $5. So I was like, I'll give it a shot. And my wife and I watched it. The story of it is based on Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, but it's kind of like a raunchier, like it's some raunchier humor or like just more adult humor. And this movie, it basically starts with these two people who kind of meet in Chicago. They're both going through things that we kind of find out throughout the course of the movie has impacted their view on things, and they hit it off really well. There's a misunderstanding that makes them not like each other. Flash forward to, you know, a year or so later, and basically his best friend's sister is marrying her sister, and so they're kind of forced back together as they go to Australia for this wedding. And this movie is delightful. I really like
the actor it stars is
Glenn Powell. He was in the new Top Gun. They have excellent chemistry, by the way. We also get your boy from Cocktail, Brian
Brown.
Brian yeah. Brown's in it.
He is the father of one of the characters.
You just piqued my interest in that.
Oh, the movie it's phenomenal. Like and you watch like it's very the humor's really good. Sydney Sweeney's delightful. Glenn Powell is awesome in it, and Rafi from Picard is in it.
Oh, cool!
She's the mother of one of the characters. Dylan McDermott Mulrooney is in it.
Oh,
yeah, it's I really really enjoyed it. It reminded me of my surprise when I watched The Proposal, just how fun and nice it is. It's not going to like blow the doors off of anything, but it's definitely a comedy where I think they invested a lot more in the story as far as the characters go than they do in a lot of other of these romantic comedies.
I mean, hell, it was very successful. It proved that rom-coms could still work in the theater.
Yeah, and also a rated R rom-com. Like, it's I'm telling you, I can't say enough good things about this movie. I would probably give it an 8 in terms of the kind of in terms of the kind of movie that it is.
If you compare it to other rom-coms or recent ones, I guess.
Yeah, like again, even the stuff in it that's kind of schmaltzy is executed in a way where you kind of smile and you enjoy it.
Yeah, if you do schmaltzy right, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, but it's really really great movie. And now going to another really great movie, let's talk about Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Roadhouse.
So Roadhouse was a movie from the 80s that no one expected them to do a Jake Gyllenhaal remake for Amazon Prime, but boy did
directed
they.
Directed by Doug Liman.
It's the first movie I watched with my daughter.
Oh,
she was 2 days old, and we watched.
Did y'all revisit this one? So, gentlemen, take us through the story of Roadhouse.
Well, Jake Gyllenhaal takes the center stage as this 2024 version of Dalton.
So it's a remake.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's a sequel.
Oh yeah, no, it's a remake. This version of Dalton, he's a former UFC fighter, and he gets approached. I'm not going to get into what happened. Let's just say something kind of bad happened to him when he was fighting at the like UFC main event, which they actually filmed at the UFC championship.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's kind of out on his own making money, kind of like the way Jason Bourne was at the beginning of that last Bourne movie. He's just going and fighting people in cages, and he's about to fight Post Malone, and this woman shows up, intending to hire someone else as
to hire Post Malone.
Yeah, as her new cooler for her bar, and when she sees the outcome of this thing, she approaches Dalton and offers him this great opportunity. Let's just say he takes her up on it, goes down to the Florida Keys, is introduced to all the employees of the Roadhouse, the place that she owns, and she wants, you know, clean it up because things have gotten out of control. And let's just say some nefarious guy played by
Billy Magnuson.
Magnuson wants this Roadhouse to close, and crazy man played by Conor McGregor is sent in to make sure that this Roadhouse goes away. And
he's a bouncer, right?
I would compare it to he's an air marshal for a bar.
Well, is that what he is in the original? Or he's just a bouncer?
Well, they call him the cooler because he's there to like train the bouncers.
And train them not just to like kick people out, but to like de-escalate situations.
And to like know like, hey, this is what how you tell if a guy's carrying a knife. This is how you de-escalate. So yeah,
he's. I haven't seen the original in years, but I remember thinking that amazing. It was a stupid movie that I thoroughly enjoyed to the T.
Okay, so I'm glad you said that because if you have that going, this is not a movie where you're looking for great plot points.
See,
that's
what I was worried. That's why I didn't
watch
this.
It is so much fucking fun.
It actually does have a few more plot points than the original one, yeah, but it's still crazy and wonderful.
This is kind of the vibes I got from this. In a world currently where a show about Jack Reacher is very popular, this kind of his character kind of reminds me a little bit of a Jack Reacher bouncer.
I like that comparison.
And I expected to just have some fun watching a movie. I got exactly what I wanted out of it and a little bit more. Really, really loved
Conor McGregor is an R-rated cartoon character.
It's a fucking amazing.
Does Jake Gyllenhaal bang a chick up against a fireplace?
Like
Patrick Swayze does in the
on a sandbar, maybe.
Yeah. There's a scene on a sandbar.
I guess. Yeah,
and I will say, I appreciate that they got someone that co-starred with Patrick Swayze because they were both in Donnie Darko.
But, didn't even think about that.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal got into amazing shape for this movie.
Boy, did he.
I really appreciated the way Doug Liman directed this movie because there are certain scenes where action kind of happens out of nowhere and you really feel like you're like sitting on Dalton's shoulder sometimes.
Yeah.
I loved this
movie. I loved it too.
I didn't see it. Give me some grades.
This type of movie, I'd probably give it like an 8. It was a lot of fun.
I was going to say 7.5, but yeah.
I was going 7.5. But yeah,
Ryan, you should totally
watch it. I had so much fun with this.
It's a popcorn movie.
Cool.
And I think it's perfect on streaming, I should say.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, from Roadhouse, we're going to take a trip to space and talk about Spaceman.
Oh, here we go, Ryan.
Spaceman.
Spaceman. Yeah, Leo Spaceman.
The first time I saw a trailer for this movie, I thought it was a joke. I thought, okay, so they put Adam Sandler in a film in space. He's by himself, and he sees a giant fucking spider.
Voiced by Paul Dano.
That shows up in the ship with him. It wasn't fake.
It's a spider named Hanus.
They really made this fucking movie.
When we're talking giant spider, you mean like the size of a room spider, or like just like
a space station?
It's about the size of a dog, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. I'd say he was what, maybe about 4 feet.
Something like that. I mean, it's abnormal.
Right, no, but I mean, it's not normal. But I mean, are we talking about the Lost in Space kind of spider thing, or just like a?
I mean, it wasn't
like that, or like the Harry Potter spider thing.
Harry Potter is a good comparison. Okay.
I don't even know.
Adam Sandler plays a. Not only does he play an astronaut, he plays a astronaut from the Czech Republic.
Yeah, apparently the Czechs are in.
Right, so, does that make him a cosmonaut?
I guess the plot, if you want to get into the movie, is this cloud has appeared right past Jupiter.
And it's visible from the Earth.
Yeah, and it was there for 4 years, and no one knows what this cloud was. And the Czech Republic was the first country to get a space probe launched to head to this cloud with one guy on it. And
but don't forget the Koreans were right behind.
Yeah, the Koreans are right behind. They launched a few days later. So basically, he's on a schedule.
I really don't want to watch this movie.
He's on a schedule to get to this cloud to figure out what's going on, and he's doing these interviews. And his pregnant wife, played by Carey Mulligan, is back on Earth.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Did you say Carey Mulligan?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like he has see these scheduled times where he has to go into this like some kind of communication pod where he can talk to her.
And he's and the big drama.
She's not showing up.
And then his big problem is the toilet's whistling.
Yeah.
And this is the plot of the movie, by the way. And so the toilet's whistling, but they don't want to spend the time to fix it because the Koreans might catch them. And then this giant spider shows up, who's voiced by Paul Dano. That's pretty much doing the same voice he did in the Batman.
Yeah.
And the name of the spider is Janus. And
he likes Nutella.
They love Nutella. There's lots of scenes.
Who
of
doesn't love Nutella?
Of them sitting there eating Nutella. What else can we say about this movie? It's
the same way. If you, I don't know about you guys, but every once in a while I get a bit of insomnia. And I have a couple films that I go to help me out with that. They're usually all space films. Solaris, 2001. I put those movies on. I'm usually out like a light. This movie very much reminded me of Solaris, which is odd because I never thought I'd say that about a George Clooney film and an Adam Sandler film. But
I found Solaris a lot more interesting than that.
I agree with that. But like the same way, it's like just pointless like humming and the sound effects is very like... It's like the movie's trying to make you... It's like trying to make you go to sleep. It's like it's purposely trying to, and
I don't know what they did to get Carey Mulligan in this film.
She must have owed somebody a favor.
And I, honestly, I don't the Sandler thing doesn't surprise me because he's Netflix's biggest star on their payroll already.
I don't even know that I can't really blame Adam Sandler. He wasn't bad in the film. It's just the movie's stupid.
I can blame Adam Sandler because. We go from like I've seen what he's capable of. I've seen Uncut Gems. I've seen Punch Drunk Love. I've seen him at his best. I've seen him in great comedies, and then I've seen him in fucking Hubie Halloween.
Well, I think,
so I can blame him.
To his defense, I think when you're approached with a project where like you're pretty much 90% of the film, you know, like The Martian or Castaway, that's an appeal to certain actors for him to try something out there, and maybe he I really don't know, but. By the end of the movie,
it's so weird, crazy, weird.
And
who else is in it? Isabella Rossellini's in it.
Oh fucking hell! Okay, just give it a score. Let's move the fuck on. I can't.
I honestly don't know. I can't believe this movie exists.
I almost want to like just say one line that is sort of a spoiler, but it just makes me laugh because this is sort of the conclusion of the film. The Koreans come to the rescue.
It's just
ridiculous.
I just the whole time I'm watching this movie, I'm like, I can't believe that this exists.
I'd probably give it about a 2.5.
I'm kind of right around with you.
Better than Mother?
Yeah.
I mean, this movie didn't make me mad or anything. I just couldn't believe it that this movie exists on this planet.
Let me explain something to you, Greg. The longer I live on this earth, I realize more and more that Mother might be the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
It's fucking terrible. All right, well.
I don't know if I might hate The Tree of Life more.
Oh, it is pretty shitty.
I don't know if I ever got through that movie.
You're fucking lucky.
They're dinosaurs, isn't that?
There are. Oddly enough. I remember us watching that movie, Glenn, and going, there's fucking dinosaurs in this?
Dinosaurs.
You see the dinosaur.
Oh, Mr. DNA.
And there it is. So from that to A Late Night with the Devil.
I don't know what that is.
Me and John went and saw this at the theater. We had a fun little movie outing.
We did.
To go see Late Night with the Devil. This is a horror film. You want to bring us this?
Yeah. So this movie, it's kind of a low-budget horror movie starring...
David Dasmalchian. Which you might know his name, but you've seen him. He's one of those... it's that guy from that thing.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of stuff. He was in The Dark Knight. He was like the henchman that they captured.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking
about.
He's
the Russian guy from Ant-Man and the Polka Dot Man from Suicide Squad. And
yeah.
He was an Oppenheimer.
He was an Oppenheimer, yeah.
Oh, I know you're talking about. The guy who was wearing Rachel Dawes' name.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And basically, he plays a character that he's like, it's in the 70s?
It takes place in 1977.
Late 1977. And he is a late night TV host, kind of like Johnny Carson, but not supposed to be Johnny Carson because in it he's always kind of second fiddle to Johnny Carson
in the rating.
In the ratings, and he's taking a leave of absence for a little while because his wife got sick and passed away, and he's come back and he's just trying to get ratings on his show, and he reads about all this occult stuff, and apparently there was a like a Church of Satan kind of thing in, was it, I forget where they say it was, and basically the guy that was the leader of it burned it down and everybody inside was killed except for this young girl that was in there, and there's a therapist who's basically trying to help her and is almost like kind of raising her and saying that she is possessed, and he convinces them to come on the show just to kind of talk a little bit
on Halloween.
On Halloween.
Yeah.
And he has them come on the show. There's a guy who's like a former magician who's basically his job now is to prove that all these different people are charlatans. And there's another guy. Houdini. And there's another guy that's kind of the opening act who is kind of like one of these.
He's a medium.
He's like a medium. And this movie is a found footage thing. Not a found footage, but I mean, the tape that ran
the master copy of the tape
during this. And it's, I don't really want to give too much else away, but it was very good.
It's fantastic.
Like, really the trailer good. Looked really good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way to do a found footage type thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it opens where it looks like you're watching like a DVD special feature or a thing on YouTube about this talk show host. And then it gets to the point where, like, you know, his famous Halloween live recording that no one's seen, but we found the master tape and we're going to play it right now. And that's the movie.
Right.
And I was very surprised how much I liked this.
Yes,
film.
I agree.
Give me a grade.
And I will just say, Davis Dalsmachian, he's one of these character actors. This proves he could lead a film because he's fantastic in this.
He is very good in this movie. The supporting characters are also very good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, the skeptic, do you remember him from The Matrix? He was Bane.
Yeah.
Shut your whole bean. If I'll put you in one punch.
I'd probably give this like an 8.
I was going to go 8.5. Wow. I loved this film.
High praise from the
Gungeon. And it's going to be streaming, was it next week or the week after, on Shudder, which is a...
The fuck is Shudder?
It's a horror streaming
service. It's a new streaming service. It's like a horror streaming
service. Is it free?
I don't know.
Not sure.
Huh. But, I've never heard about this.
Shudder is the one of the many studios that produced this movie.
Yeah. We don't need more streaming services.
But yeah, that's...
We really fucking don't. Monopolize, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
On the Line.
On the Line. Okay, so I went on Netflix. This movie is why I'm glad Netflix exists, because I never even heard of this fucking movie. It's a Mel Gibson film where he plays a late night radio DJ, basically. And
what's his name?
Oh, I forgot.
Elvis.
Oh, that's right. It is Elvis. So,
and they refer to him as a shock jock.
Yeah. Which, interestingly enough, like, he goes... Like, he tells his wife, like, the movie opens, he's at home with his family, and he's, like, talking to his wife, like, this is a really big episode that he's about to go record at night, which, when he gets on there, he starts recording, doesn't seem like anything really big's going on. He's just taking calls, and then turns out somebody calls and says that he's at his house and is going to break in and kidnap or kill his family and stuff. And, you know, Mel Gibson's left on the phone to try and, you know, defuse the situation. That's about as far as I can really go into describing the film before you get into the spoilers and the big
twists and turns.
Massive twists and turns. So let me just tell you about this and what I think about this movie. Whether you love this movie, whether you hate this movie, you will be hooked from beginning all the way to the end. You will not be bored. You will want to know what happens at the end. Now, when it got to the end, I fucking hated it. I thought it was fucking trash. Now, my wife actually liked it. She thought the twist was kind of clever.
Trash.
That's your best review ever.
Honestly, like, the type trash. Of the twist that they end up doing, I normally like those type of twists.
Which one?
Yeah. The first one I usually kind of like. But this time I didn't. And I really didn't like the second twist.
Yeah, there's a twist. And this isn't giving it. There's a twist, but then there's a twist on the twist.
Shyamalan would be
so
proud.
While I can't say I would recommend the movie to tell people like that I liked it, I will tell them this: you'll remember this moment when you watch that movie. You won't forget it, and you will not be bored. This ain't gonna be like Anatomy of a Fall, where you're sitting there for 2 hours and 20 minutes watching a court case.
And it's only like an hour and a half long, maybe an hour and 40 minutes or something.
It's very fast paced. Mel Gibson is actually very reserved. He's not all crazy acting in it. He was quite fine in it. I would probably grade it like a 5. I'm on the fence because I didn't like the twist.
You're on the line.
I'm on the line.
I liked the twist, but I mean, I'd still give it like a 6.5. I mean, it wasn't great. I'm kind of like you. Like, I could recommend this to people, but I don't know whether everybody's going to like it or,
right.
or hate it.
I mean, I'm glad I watched it.
I'm with you. I thought it was a very interesting thing for Mel Gibson to do at this point in his career.
It's not like anything he's really done before.
I get the feeling he doesn't get very many offers.
Oh, he might get the offers. I don't know exactly what he's getting offered.
If you go on like Tubi or some shit, sometimes like there's some random Mel Gibson.
I mean, he was in freaking Expendables.
That I think those have been.
And like, in the what you call it, the John Wick show.
The Connell, he was in that.
Yeah, but anyway, I don't know. I'd probably give this 5.7.
So did you like the two twists, the major twists?
Not really. At first, when I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is kind of, they're trying to do like a take on Phone Booth.
Yeah. It reminded me of Phone Booth in that movie,
The Game.
No, it was that the guy, Eric Bedrosian, in like the 80s was a radio DJ. It's a similar story in a way. I don't remember the name of the film, but it was a weird movie. I want to say it's called like Radio.
Talk to Me or?
It's
Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
Yeah.
But it was Mel Gibson was fine. A lot of the supporting actors, they're okay, I guess. I mean,
well, me and
any chance to see old Lucky Larry
show up? Yeah, I forgot he's in it. And I will say this: John and I talked about this before. Some of the problems that John had about the performances in the film,
they're explained.
It's explained by the end, which again, it's an interesting film.
Just some of these movies that have these certain twists, you kind of like, oh, I want to go watch that again to see if, like, it's...
You pick up on it.
I didn't want to do that with this
one. I agree. This was no Sixth Sense.
And again, twist. I say I like the twist, but I mean, I gave the movie a 6.5.
Right.
I didn't have a problem with the twist, but it was
Yeah, I'm going like, yeah.
The movie entertained me for all...
It did.
I'll say that for it.
Like I said, I'm around 5.7.
And in a lot of ways, this is kind of like the perfect Netflix film, just to throw on when you're looking for something to put on.
Yeah.
It's very quick, very fast-paced movie. So.
Well, let's keep going with the Netflix conversation. Let's talk about Damsel.
Yeah. I did not get to see that. I really wanted to. The trailer looks incredible.
Yeah, me and
the trailer
me,
is right.
Me and the wife watched this.
Yep, likewise.
So who wants to take us through the plot?
You want me to do it?
Sure.
All right, so Damsel, Netflix movie, stars Millie Bobby Brown.
You can only say it that way.
That's right. Millie Bobby Brown. She plays Elodie. And this is a fairy tale type film where she and her father, it's played by Ray Winstone, they live in kind of a poor village, and they're trying to figure out, how they're going to make ends meet and farm and stuff like this.
But he is the ruler.
Yeah, he's the ruler.
Of this little village. Yeah,
he's the ruler. So she's pretty much the queen of this little village
because
she's his daughter. And they get contacted by a neighboring kingdom that's very wealthy. And they kind of propose a swap, like a marriage situation. They said they have a prince without a wife, and they want an heir. So pretty much, if she marries the prince, they'll get lots of money, and they'll be fine from then on in. So everybody kind of agrees. The wedding goes on, and let's just say things take a very dastardly twist after the wedding. Involves some secret societies and some creatures, and I guess the trailer kind of shows what happens, right?
So basically, she gets tossed into this pit.
It's a human sacrifice type thing,
and she's there basically as a sacrifice to this dragon, who's voiced by
Shura Agdeshlu.
Now, the thing about it is, I don't think that they altered her voice at all.
I don't think they did either.
She was the perfect casting.
She is perfect casting for this. Everything Lynn just described, yeah, nice little fairy tale. And that's what I love about this movie. I think it's really good for, like, a family to watch. Millie Bobby Brown is an interesting talent. The Enola Holmes movies are very entertaining. She's great on Stranger Things. I think she's a very talented actress. And she's almost like, I wouldn't compare her acting career to Taylor Swift's music career, whereas we've been with her for so long, since like kind of the beginning of things, that she's more prolific than a lot of other actresses that are out there, and I think we've only scratched the surface of what her talent is.
Yeah, I'd compare her career thus far to maybe early Jennifer Lawrence, and this has a Hunger Games vibe to it.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and it's the thing is, I think this is one of those fairy tale movies where there's a delicate balance between things that adults will enjoy watching, and things that are there for younger, you know, younger adults and kids and things like
sure.
that. I think this is a really it does a good job of not being overly violent while giving enough action. It's a really well rounded film with some great performances. I liked it a lot.
Sounds like it. Damn.
Yeah, and I will say my wife freaking loved this film.
Oh, my wife yeah. did too.
Yeah.
So did mine. And I mean, I really like the two supporting characters, that Angela Bassett and Robin Wright. Like, they were both very good.
Yeah, and the one that plays the prince, he was the kid from Jurassic World.
Which
I kind of liked him in his little part. But this is Millie Bobby Brown. She's just fantastic in roles like this. You know, badass women that's name kind of start with L. but it's this was a lot of fun. Great Netflix film. I don't know, I'd probably give it. I'm circling around 8-ish. 8.
I was circling around 8 as well.
I'd say 7.5.
No one gave it an 11.
I see what you did there.
But no, it's fun. Like I said, we had a lot of fun with this.
Well, Ghostbusters.
I think I'm the only one that actually got to see Ghostbusters.
Not for lack of wanting to.
Frozen Empire.
Yeah, we just missed the opportunity.
Karen and I went the other night. We had a date night.
I didn't see it. I just said it's what I heard.
Hi, here we go.
Well, you want to hear? You want to hear the story?
So, and I will say, Glenn told me something about this movie before I went to see it, and he was right in what he had read about it.
It was an interview with Dan Aykroyd.
It was an interview with Dan Aykroyd that apparently he wrote most of the episodes, or if not all the episodes,
I think he did all
of the real Ghostbusters cartoon, and this was a treatment from an episode of the cartoon.
Why the fuck would they make that into a movie?
Well, all right, so Dan Aykroyd just sort of said, he had all these scripts laying around from the real Ghostbusters animated show that he wrote. They're doing these new movies with kids. So he's like, let me brush off some of these old scripts that I have and kind of update it. So this story comes from an idea that he had doing the animated series back in the day. So
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about, you know, X-Men. That's an animated show I'd love to see them bring back as the real Ghostbusters.
You know who was one of the primary writers on that show? J. Michael Straczynski from Babylon 5.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not the Ghostbusters with the gorilla.
No, definitely not.
What were they thinking?
They were just the Ghostbusters. They weren't the real Ghostbusters. But,
All right, so
this just takes place about a year after the events of the Ghostbusters Afterlife. They've moved to New York, and they're living and working in the fire station, that is the Ghostbusters home base. And when I say they, Paul Rudd is still with the mom. They're like kind of dating and living together, and the two kids that are there. And at the very beginning, they're out hunting a ghost, and the daughter, she's in the like little, you know, what's the little thing, the seat that pops out in the side of the
sidecar.
The sidecar thing, and you know, she's shooting the proton pack at a ghost, catches it but destroys a bunch of stuff. So they get brought in to get balled out by the mayor, who is Peck.
This man has no dick.
It's William Atherton. Yep.
And he was in Real Genius.
Yeah, he was.
Holy shit.
And basically, he's saying that, you know, they're all going to be in trouble, whatever, they can't do this, they're destroying so much property. And they're like, oh, Lily Rowland, she's only 16. And he's like, oh, so she's, you know, underage too. And basically they can continue doing what they're doing because the people kind of want it to happen, but she can't do it. And she was the one that wanted to do it all in the first place. And basically Ray is still there working at his little antiquity shop, whatever, and people keep bringing in these weird things. And a guy brings in some stuff that he got from his grandmother's house after she died, and there's this orb in it that, for some reason, it's got some kind of evil thing inside that I'm not going to get into. It's and basically, when it gets released, it starts making everything freeze. And he's trying to release everything from the big containment unit in the firehouse because that'll open a portal to the other side, which they said they don't know what it is. I enjoyed it, but it's nowhere near as good as the last one, and I don't think there has been a Ghostbusters movie that I have not enjoyed watching. I mean, I enjoyed the one with the all-female cast. I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite by any means. I enjoy Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, even though I did not like Ghostbusters 2, I mean, it was a fun watch.
Yeah. I would put this on par with Ghostbusters 2. I think the original Ghostbusters and Afterlife are far superior to this one. And I think I'd honestly probably put the female cast one kind of around the same thing, too. It's fun to watch. It's a popcorn movie. But it does just seem like another installment of a series. Just
the female Ghostbusters just to me makes no sense. Like it you can't tell if it's a remake, a sequel.
That one was just the conception didn't work.
Yeah,
because the way they promoted it was like it was a remake, but then all the actors were playing different parts. It didn't make sense.
There was a couple of just weird things that I didn't like in it, where you could tell they just wanted to keep some of the characters from Afterlife in it, because Paul Rudd moving in with them, that makes sense. They were kind of together, and they moved.
Carrie Coon's the mom,
and they've moved back here, and they, you know, from Oklahoma. But they go to see Ray at his little antiquity shop, and he's doing a podcast with the kid who's podcast whatever, who's just there working with Ray now, and
from Oklahoma,
and he says that he told his in the summer, so he's told his parents he's at space camp, that's why he's there. And then Winston, as we learned at the end of the movie, you know, he's got all this money and he's got a big like foundation, and he's trying to do research on the paranormal. And the girl who was like the sheriff of Oklahoma's daughter or whatever, she's the intern that's working there. And it's like, really? You just brought everybody from...
Did they even mention like that they met the kids in the events of the first movie, or are they just there?
They're just there, but I mean, the kids all just still know each other. Yeah. But I mean, they don't really get into it much. I did enjoy watching the movie. I'm kind of going somewhere between a 6.5 and a 7. I'd probably give it a 7, honestly, because I mean, Ghostbusters has got a special place in my heart, so I'd probably give it a 7. I enjoyed watching it, but it's not nearly as good as Afterlife was.
Well, we have to have a long overdue conversation about the Shai Halud. Now it is time for us to discuss Dune 2.
And I think, Greg, you and I are the only two that have seen it.
I think we are the only two that have seen it.
If it's still possible to go see it in the theaters, y'all still
need to see it. I fully intend to. It's just the length of the movie kind of is the problem.
I totally get that. But yeah, this is one, not only see it in theaters, but see it in some sort of Prime or Dolby.
Yeah.
Because the sound... like in this movie is incredible. But, okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room before we get into the plot, and that is that, you know, Ryan famously thinks the first one is boring, wrongly. But
it is.
Let's talk about.
I thought you were talking about selling Star Wars, Gary.
I thought you were talking about the popcorn bucket.
Oh, that, you know, take it home.
Did you fuck it?
I couldn't get one.
Oh, well, sucks to be you.
If you're listening, if we have any friends out there, you can, you know, get me a Dune popcorn bucket. Not for fucking purposes, but just because it'd be a nice fixture to offer to people.
And speaking of popcorn buckets, just I forgot to mention this.
Did you get the Ghostbusters?
I did not get the Ghostbusters, but they have the Ghost Trap as a popcorn bucket. I thought that looked kind
of
cool. Okay.
And then the light coming out of it has the popcorn.
I looked at the trap, right?
But I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that you need to view these movies. It's kind of like Kill Bill and Kill Bill 2.
Yes.
This is technically one big story. And this is the second part of it, and I think this is the more interesting part of it.
The first movie was definitely building all of the world and the characters and the setup and everything, and this is all the execution of all the action. And
it picks up immediately
after
the first film. And basically Paul and his mom are in the desert with, you know, Mitch and the Fremen, and they're on their way to the Fremen's main city. And the movie doesn't do a good job of like kind of portraying like how long of a time this is, but they're out there for a while, and it's essentially like, you know, the Harkonnen think that he's dead, so they come back to take over the planet again. Dave Bautista's there doing Dave Bautista things.
The only thing that you can get to kind of see how time goes by is you find out at the end of the first one that his mother is pregnant, mm-hmm. and by the end of the movie she has still not had the baby.
Well, and interestingly enough, in the original movie and in the book, she has the like they're. It's basically like 2 or 3 years that this movie's supposed to take place in. This one, you know, kind of shrinks that time period. The interesting thing is we learn a lot more about... We get to go to the Harkonnen home planet. We get to meet the Emperor, which that was a shitty fucking Christopher Walken impression. But there we are. Christopher Walken and his daughter, Florence Pugh, who John and I have discussed this. Like, she's just incredibly adorably and wonderful. Yeah. I get, you know, she's pretty great.
Is she the naked girl in Oppenheimer?
She's...
Why are y'all laughing?
Because
it's not wrong.
It's a very Ryan remembrance.
Yeah. I
mean, she's also the new Black Widow.
I just wanted to make sure that's who we're talking about.
Yeah.
So we get to get more of that. Because they've already done the work of building this world, we get to kind of flesh it out more. And the film kind of deals with Paul resisting his destiny and ultimately what pushes him over the edge to accept it.
And it's kind of he's got all these people that some don't believe in him, but a lot of them that really do. And every time he's kind of, he does something kind of unintentionally that makes them believe that he is this chosen one or whatever, he starts to get into his own head, and maybe I am this amazing kind of thing.
What's kind of funny to Harry Potter. Too, because there's a meme that shows him doing some random thing, and then Javier Bardem going, "See, he's the shot. he's an Agahib."
It is kind of funny in the movie.
What's he called?
He's Muad'Dib.
That's his name that he chooses.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, this movie, I think, the more time goes on, this is going to be one of those classic, like, this is a masterpiece.
Yes.
Seriously?
These two movies, I'm telling you, these two movies are just fucking masterpiece. Denis Villeneuve, the direction's incredible. We talked about the sound before. I know that the book series, like, gets really strange very quick. Like, there's rumors of them doing the third one, which would have...
Denis Villeneuve's on it. It's Dune Messiah. It's called.
Yeah, and I don't know that... there's something I kind of waited till after. There's no after credit scene, Ryan. But I waited till after the credits because I know that there's something that happens that I don't know if they're going to like reveal it via. Because it's part of the story of the next film. So I don't know if they're going to wind up revealing it or not.
Sand worms. You hate them, right? I hate them myself.
But the acting in this, Timothy Chalamet, for me, this is a guy who like I thought maybe he was too young for this, but Paul in the books is a lot like. This is Game of Thronesy, because in Game of Thrones, the book, the characters are much younger than we get in the show. And I think they did a good job casting it, because I didn't realize how young Paul was in the books, because I'm used to, you know, the David Lynch version of it. But they do a really good job of, like, you know, he's an interesting, complex character, and the threat that he winds up becoming, not just to, you know, the Harkonnen, but to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Frank Herbert is famous for, like, wanting people to understand that Paul is not a hero. He's an anti-hero. Like, it's to show the risk of these types of things. And I didn't, you know, like, one of the things that I saw is people don't realize that this is just, you know, the year 10,000, but it's like, you know, our culture has hit the stars. So a lot of this is all, you know, these are humans, you know, years and years and years and years down the road.
Yeah.
I love this. This is classic sci-fi.
They do introduce a few new characters into the, like, Florence Pugh's character, Christopher Walken, plays the Emperor, but also Austin Butler.
Austin Butler, yeah.
Is so creepy and...
Space Elvis.
Yeah.
He plays the part that Sting played in the original one, right?
Which is always funny to me to go back and see who played people in this. I do like that they played down a lot of the Baron Harkonnen, the more questionable choices Frank Abraham made in the original and what they portrayed in other things, but Austin Butler's character... is this level of depravity that...
Well, they first mentioned his character as being somebody that could take over one day for the Harkonnens. And Florence Pugh's character, when it gets mentioned, she just says something just along the lines of, oh, he's a psychopath. That does not prepare you for his personality.
The motherfucker's crazy.
Yeah.
What would you give this?
I think I'm going to give it a 9.
9 was where I was, too.
Yeah. I think I gave the first one like a 7.5.
I the first one I really like.
I really enjoyed the first one. But
the first one I think I gave an 8. Now collectively the two of them, fucking 9.5. This is a.
When are we gonna go see?
Is it still playing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know. We could go one night this week.
All
right. We have to check the show times because it might be unlimited runs.
Yeah. Also, they've been the later shows are earlier now.
Well, because it's a long movie.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But definitely watch it. Again, I can't say enough. Timothée Chalamet continues to be an actor that I'm massively impressed with. I can't wait to see more of him.
And I feel like I get more impressed with him like when I see him on when he hosts SNL because he's like he's also like very like down earth and makes fun of himself.
Yeah,
a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's Willy Wonka.
His character, the white rapper that he played, which when he hosted again, he came back and did it again. And his rap name is Smoke Cheddar the Ass Getter. And it cracks me up.
Well, we have to remember a few people that have passed away since the last time we sat at this table, and we're going to kind of go through them. But Joe Flaherty,
All right, so Joe Flaherty, He was an actor that started his career with Second City, SCTV.
Yeah, SCTV.
And he's one of these character actors. He's done everything from Happy Gilmore to Back to the Future 2 to Detroit Rock City.
Yeah.
And I guarantee if you see this guy, you know who he is. And
most people will know him from Happy Gilmore as being the guy that Shooter McGavin hires to just taunt Happy Gilmore, and he goes to you, jackass.
But in Back to the Future 2, he was the Western Union guy that brought the letter at the end. He was a priest in Detroit Rock City, but he's always hilarious.
Yeah.
Or he was, but, you know, he was a really funny comedian that appeared in a lot of things. So, you know, he'll be missed.
We also lost M. Emmett Walsh.
That's right. This is another one of these character actors that's been around forever. I mean, he was in the Blood Simple, the first Coen Brothers movie. He was in the original Blade Runner. He was in The Jerk. He was in
A Time to Kill.
Yeah. My Best Friend's Wedding. I mean, he's one of these guys. He was in everything. And in fact, when he passed, I was reading, you know, kind of about his career. And the old Siskel and Ebert show, which any of you youngins don't know, there used to be two film critics named Siskel and Ebert, and they would have a show where they discussed film, and it kind of brought film criticism to the forefront. They had a rule. It was the Walsh-Stanton rule, where if, no matter how bad a movie was in, if M. Emmett Walsh or Harry Dean Stanton was in it, it couldn't be all bad. So this was one of these character actors that was really a working actor. He was in like lots of classic films, and if you saw him, you pretty much you'll remember him. And I mean, he was pretty old when he passed, but I mean, he was still working up until right before he died. So you know, rest in peace.
By the way, since you brought up Siskel and Ebert, did you know about this Easter egg in the Roland Emmerich, Dean Devlin, Godzilla?
Absolutely.
I never noticed that before.
They made him look like Siskel and Ebert, and then gave him a thumbs down at the end. Yeah.
The mayor was Mayor Ebert, and his assistant was Gene.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, like when he goes to leave him, he like holds his thumbs up and then puts his thumb down and walks off.
Yeah, they did that because Siskel and Ebert famously hated Independence
Day. They did, that's right.
So they put that in there.
Hmm. And finally, this one really made me very sad, but we lost Lou Gossett Jr.
And he was really working right up until the end. Cause,
was he really?
I mean, he was in the Watchmen show. He was in the remake of The Color Purple that had just come out.
I want your D.O.R. Sorry, it's from Officer and Gentleman.
Mayonnaise.
He won an Oscar for that movie.
Lou and the Helmet.
I always remember him. There was a Dennis Quaid movie called Enemy Mine that he was the...
Yes, he was the alien.
He was the alien in it.
Was he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
You don't remember Dendy at Blockbuster always talking about, that's the one with Lou as the alien.
No.
It was Lou and the Helmet and Lou as the alien.
And he was in those terrible Iron Eagle movies.
I actually never saw those.
I saw.
I can't believe you're not mentioning Jaws 3D.
Oh my God, he's so funny in that movie.
But
tell me some damn fish's mother.
I mean, he's just he was a legend.
He was. He was great. I mean, his performance in Officer Gentleman was iconic.
He was really good in that Watchmen show. I thought he was the Hood of Justice. Or yeah. But, great actor. You know, again, he'll be missed.
Gentlemen, now it is time to nominate this week's Awesome Villager. Who are your nominees and why?
Well, I'm going to nominate someone who you will not pick to win, but I am a huge wrestling fan. And WrestleMania was this past weekend, and Cody Rhodes finally
finished his socks.
Story and won the WWE Championship. And it was very, very emotional, you know. If you grew up in wrestling, you know how important Dusty Rhodes, his father, was to wrestling fans. It was really cool, and his mom was in the ring, and it was very emotional, really cool. And Cody's always been really I've met him before. He's a really nice guy, and I met him when he was a nobody. And he
did I apologize to you on air last time? Or
you did?
I did. Yeah, because again, I need to reiterate the fact that like I didn't get like wrestling as a kid was just this like cartoony thing, and then I just kind of hated on you, but like. No, you don't have to. It's not that I wouldn't vote for the guy. I see the value of wrestling.
Well, like Logan Paul,
it ain't for me, but
the YouTuber who famously like challenged Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match and didn't win, but came pretty close. He was on a podcast recently, and they were asking him about wrestling, and he said that it was harder to prepare for wrestling matches and to fight Floyd Mayweather because of everything that is entailed in trying to perform. So. It's an art. So you get it or you don't. It's just that simple. But that's my pick.
I'm going to pick Anthony Boyle, who's like the actor that I said. He plays John Wilkes Booth in Manhunt, and he also played Harry Crosby, who's one of the main characters and narrator of Masters of the Air. This guy's got a huge, like a great range. I mean, the characters could not be further apart. Couldn't be further different. And I was kind of, I just kept looking at the guys, John Wilkes Booth. I'm like, who? I know this guy from somewhere. And when I realized that it was him, I was like, oh my God, I can't even believe that's the same person. But he's excellent in both of those shows.
All right, I'm going to nominate David Dasmalchian. This is a guy that's definitely paid his dues, working actor, and I guarantee, like I said, you may not know his name, but lately he's appeared in Last Voyage of the Demeter, Oppenheimer, The Late Night with the Devil, The Ant-Man, The Suicide Squad, The Weird Al movie. I mean, he was in the first Dune film, and like John had mentioned, The Dark Knight, but he always gives a great performance. He's got a very interesting look, and I just really loved this Late Night with the Devil movie that he did, and I thought he proved that he can be a leading man, and he should be a leading man. He's just a very talented actor, and he's paid his dues, and I think it's time for him to kind of break free and, you know, start starring and stuff.
Yeah.
My nominee is going to be Timothée Chalamet. For this reason, it's not just because of the Dune that we talked about, which, again, epic performance, but I recently watched Wonka. And I hadn't watched it. And that was a movie that I think I maybe resisted because of the fact that I, you know, loved the original with Gene Wilder, and I did not really care for the one with Johnny Depp. And my wife was worried too, but we watched that movie and were just transfixed and enjoyed it so much, and his performance. And the fact that, like, when we watched the making of after, how there was never any other actor that they wanted for the role. And I can see why. There's a joy and a simplicity to what kind of he does. And then you kind of contrast that with his performance in Dune. He's a very magnetic actor. To your point, John, when you see him in interviews, he seems very down to earth. I love everything about him. And I think to Glenn's point about David Dasmalchian, the career of this guy, he's going to be an actor we talk about for generations. So, gentlemen, if you have to vote for someone other than your own, who would it be?
I will go with Timothée Chalamet. Mostly because I don't really like him. But I can appreciate his talent, which makes me kind of want to pick him even more, because I don't know, something about him just kind of is off putting to me. But
he's about to play Bob Dylan, man.
There he goes. Ching ching me.
But anyway, I think he's a fantastic actor. So yeah, I'll pick him.
I'm gonna go with Anthony Boyle. Like you said, I was the same thing with you when I was watching Manhunt. I'm like, I know this guy from somewhere, and I never would have thought that he was one of the heroes from Master of Air.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with David Dasmalchian, because, I mean, that movie kind of blew me away. I didn't really know anything about the movie until we went and saw it, and I was blown away. It was really good.
And I'm going to also go with David Dasmalchian for all the reasons you guys have mentioned, but also because I'm with Glenn. He's a person you don't traditionally see as a leading man, but I think it's his time. He, to me, would be a great choice for a Joker.
If he wasn't already, like, right. In the Dark Knight and in the Suicide Squad.
But James Gunn, if you're listening, you know.
Bring your polka dot man.
Maybe have him play multiple roles. You never know. So
he would make a good Joker, though.
He would completely. Like, he's very adaptable to a lot of comic book characters, but I think he's a tremendous actor. And David Dasmalchian, you are this week's awesome villager. And you can come by, like, hang out
please.
With us.
Yeah.
Tell us about your life, career, and the rest.
All right.
It's been fun, guys.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Remember, there are so many places to listen to us, but the one thing that we want to ask of you is a free thing that you can do, which is just maybe follow us on Spotify. It really helps the show out, helps the algorithm, you know, it helps us get to more people, and it's the only thing we'll ever ask you to do. Just give us a follow. It really helps us along. And you can find us on other sources like...
You can find us at The Awesome Village Podcast. We are currently on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X. And you can watch our videos at awesome.village.pod on TikTok. It's still there, right? It's TikTok.
To my knowledge.
Yeah, I think TikTok's still around. Yeah. And yeah, you can find our videos there.
All right. This has been Greg.
Brian.
John.
And I'm Glenn.
We'll see you next week.